You may have heard that there's now no limit to the amount of cigars or rum you can bring back from Cuba. The new rule took effect yesterday. Many master travelers from the U.S. have already visited far-flung places like Iceland and the Galapagos Islands are anxious to explore Cuba. If you want to go, Wall Street Journal travel editor Scott McCartney has a primer on how to do it. He's just back. Scott, what was it like?
It was fascinating. It was not at all what I expected. The beach areas were just beautiful. The resorts were nice, not plush, but moderate and efficient. And Havana is, it's a fascinating city. It's parts of it are gorgeous. Parts of it show incredible poverty and neglect. In general, people were extremely friendly, and it was a fascinating place to be.
How'd you get there? Permission wise, were you given status as a reporter doing research, or like, how were you able to go?
Well, I went as a journalist, so I got a journalist visa officially through the Cuban embassy, and that entails, where are you going, who are you going to talk to, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But for most people now, and I just flew regularly scheduled flights, and that's really what's changed. You can now get there easily on regularly scheduled flights. That service is going to pick up at the end of November when direct flights start to Havana from lots of U.S. cities. And for most people, you can self-certify. There are 12 categories you can go to Cuba under. Tourism is not one of them, but many people do. It's a very loose system. You can self-certify. There has people who are involved in Cuban tourism and travel and airlines say they've just never seen anybody audited. The Treasury Department says they don't comment on enforcement, they also don't say they are enforcing. And I talked to people who, on my flight who actually self-certified that they were going for journalistic activities, which is one of the 12 categories. And the criteria was this guy publishes some videos on YouTube. Another guy said he certified that he was going on an educational trip, and he signed up for salsa dancing lessons. it really is a lot more open for travel than it ever was before.
Right. All right. So would it be considered an expensive trip?
It's very interesting. Some of it is surprisingly expensive, and some of it is, what you would expect in terms of cheap. Americans are definitely paying a premium. I mean, even in currency exchange, you can exchange U.S. dollars at airports or hotels, and all the currency exchange is run by the government. It's all the same price, but you pay, and the exchange is set to the dollar. So one Cuban, they call it the CUC, the CUC, is worth $1. But you pay a 13% charge for changing dollars. Now, you don't pay a rate as high as that for changing euros or other currency, so there's kind of the American premium. Mm. Hotels in Havana, there's a real shortage of hotels throughout Cuba, and that is an issue. And so the hotels, there are some extremely nice, glorious old hotels kept up in good shape, and they're $400, $500, $600 a night.
Wow!
You can do better with some package tours. A lot of the tour companies have hotel inventory locked up with the Cuban government, so they have better access and some better prices. But there's also this fascinating government-run program that puts people into homes, into apartments, into B&Bs. There's a very extensive private housing network, and that's to accommodate more tourists when the hotels are full, and they're full, especially in peak season in the winter. So Airbnb has tapped into this network, and you could find, and these are great accommodations certified by the government. Some of them some of the old, just beautiful, large homes in Havana now are rented out for rooms, and the prices there are very affordable. The beach resorts with package deals are a bargain. Canadians who go are often bargain hunters, and nice facilities, cheaper than other Caribbean islands.
Yeah.
But there's high-end stuff as well.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal travel editor Scott McCartney. His piece is called "Everything You Need to Know for a Trip to Cuba." He went. He's back. What about renting a car? Can you do that? And do you get one of those like old, I don't know, like 1950s era vehicles that you always see in pictures?
Well, there are car rental. There's one agency run by the government. I heard some complaints from people who tried to do that, 10 people in line who all have a reservation and there's one car on the lot and that kind of stuff. I wouldn't recommend renting a car, but you really don't need to. There's ample taxi and car service around. One guy I talked to had arranged for, through his Airbnb host, he arranged for a driver. He flew to Varadero. It's about a two-and-a-half-hour drive to Havana. The Airbnb host driver, or, could have been cousin or brother or whoever, picked him up in an old car, drove him to Havana. He said it was an incredible experience, although after about 30 minutes he wished there was air conditioning. but the old cars are plentiful. Lots of them around. There are also some old Russian boxes of cars, and there are some new Hyundais and other things too. So you can certainly find transportation with air conditioning. It's pretty easy to arrange for a driver or taxis. One of the interesting aspects of the Cuban economy is that the people who deal with tourists, tour guides, taxi drivers, other folks, are very well educated, and often, I talked to a waitress who was a pediatrician, but on weekends and nights she earns extra income as a waitress, and actually can earn more as a waitress than as a pediatrician.
Wow!
For any job that where you have exposure to tips from tourists, you can really supplement your income and do better than the government salary. And so you find very well-educated professional people driving taxis because the tips are good.
How about that? How are you treated?
Extremely well, especially when people find out you're an American. It's fascinating. There's so much. I mean, we think of it as so isolated and all, but there are so many Cuban families who have people in the United States.
Okay, yeah.
So people would stop me on the street and, because I look like an American, or I'm wandering around taking pictures, and they say, "Where are you from?" And right. I say, "USA." And they say, "Oh, my brother lives in Tampa." Gotten a whole discussion about the San Francisco Giants with a baseball fan. And they're very attuned to American culture. They're very excited about the opening up of relations. This is hugely important to their economy.
Yeah.
For the most part, could not have been friendlier.
Could you, did you knock everything out in one trip? Do you need to go back? Would you go back?
I certainly would go back. This was one trip. My visa was good for a certain time period, and so no longer good. But I would go back, self-certify and go. I mean, this will get easier as U.S. Airlines can start offering packages with hotels and stuff. If you look at what Air Canada and WestJet do from Canada, Cuba is one of their top destinations, and I think it's the same thing's going to happen for Americans.
The Wall Street Journal's Scott McCartney.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.